Hey, folks, excited about our conversation with John Cooper, the lead singer of the wildly successful rock band Skillet. And even if you're not a hard rock fan or you don't know anything about John, you're going to love this conversation as we dive into the specifics behind chasing a career as a musician when mom doesn't like the music, thinks it's evil, and dad thinks it's a loser profession. How did he overcome that to be who he is today? That and more coming up right now. All right, John, so I got to know, anytime you talk to a musician, which we live in Nashville, and so I'm friends with musicians, I show up at like silly Halloween parties for my kids, and you sit down and you're talking to dads, and you get 5 minutes in, and you find out that they're world-class, you know, writers, songwriters. I mean, this happens in Nashville all the time. And so I'm forever fascinated by musicians, primarily because I'm always curious to know, when did the love of music present itself? Do you remember? When do you first get intrigued, or when does it become a thing where you're like, I dig music?
I think a lot of people, musicians or not, it's probably hard for most people to remember when they first fell in love with music because it's so ubiquitous.
Right.
You know, you grow up, you hear music. If you go to church,
yeah.
you hear music at church. You know, if you go anywhere, you go to the baseball game.
Yeah.
Bah, 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 bah.
Oh, yeah,
you know, it's
everywhere.
Like music is always – it's always connected to something, celebration, mm-hmm. worship, going to the mall if you had an older sibling. For me, my mom was a piano teacher and a voice teacher, and she would not like the kind of singing I do.
Uh-huh. Right, of course,
But my mom was a piano teacher, and so I grew up with, ever since I can remember, mm-hmm. my mom would sing opera. The loudest singing you've ever heard.
Yeah, right.
Like way louder than my singing.
Right.
She it was like the whole house would shake when my mom would sing opera. And I just loved music ever since I was a kid. I was fascinated with it.
Uh-huh.
The first time I heard music that absolutely like floored me.
Yeah.
Was because my friend down the street had MTV.
So
before the interview, me and you were talking about the fact that we're the same age.
We're children of the 80s. So we're growing up in the 80s, and MTV changed everything.
Oh, man.
Music videos. It blew our minds.
Yeah. Music television.
That's crazy.
They don't do music anymore, but that's what the M stands for, people.
That's right.
Music television. And so my buddy had music television.
Yeah.
And he's like, you got to watch this. And I was like, what is it? I don't understand what it is. I've never heard music like
this. Of course,
And I heard Michael Jackson Beat It.
Yeah.
And I was all in. Now, funny thing about this that I think this will come up later in the interview is that, I came home and I was singing Beat It to my mom because I'm like, my mom loves music and I heard this amazing song. And my mom gave me the holiest booty whipping all time.
Yeah, right.
For singing the devil's music.
Of course.
Know? So, but that is when I first just fell in love with music. I was about six.
Okay. That's fantastic. All right. So this is a little fun context question. Really not a lot of meat, but I think I got to know. I think people want to know. Do you think your mom singing opera really loud around the house all the time in some Freudian weird psychology way leads you to be in a kind of a rocker who's screaming and yelling and banging on? It's like the complete opposite side of the spectrum. You think that plays into it at all or no?
I don't think so, but I don't know. Maybe so that I don't think I'd be a very good opera singer.
Right.
I don't think I quite have the voice for church music either.
All right, so the genre you're in now, right? Rock and I mean, how would you describe it? How would you describe your genre?
I would say hard rock.
Hard rock. Okay. So I love reading the stories of the great rock stars, great musicians, and who influenced them early on. Mm-hmm. One of the most fascinating things I ever heard, I saw Garth Brooks, his solo show in Vegas. And he spent the first hour playing acoustically the songs of the musicians that he heard in the car with his dad growing up, and he kind of explained how it influenced him. I'm very curious, who are the artists that, if you look at your career now, who influenced you? Not what you enjoyed as much, but who influenced you and maybe gave you some creative inspiration?
Sure. That is super interesting. I mean, for me, my story is kind of strange because I wasn't allowed to listen to rock music.
Right. After the booty whipping.
After the booty whipping. I mean, that was a whole, like, all of heaven was like, you're about to see. All of heaven was like, this is the one we've been waiting for.
Yes.
Anyway, but that was, and my friend started listening to rock and metal when I was in about sixth grade.
Okay.
And so, of course, as you know, I mean, in the 80s, you couldn't go anywhere right. without hearing Bon Jovi. Yeah. You couldn't get in an elevator without hearing Living on a Prayer or something. Right. So I would hear this music, and I loved it, but I couldn't have it at home. But I'd go to my friend's house, and they'd all be listening to Metallica, Bon Jovi, Motley Crue.
Oh, yeah.
All that stuff really influenced me. But I will say, I have a real love for Christian music, and so this is kind of where the story changes.
Yeah.
Sixth grade, I'm complaining to my friend, there's no way my mom would let me bring this Metallica album home.
Sure.
No way. And he goes, well, you know there's Christian rock music. And I said, no, why have they held this from me?
Yeah.
Who's responsible?
Who are they? Where can I find them? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So he gave me a Petra. There's
of course.
A Christian band Petra. Gave me a Petra tape. Cassette tape people. And I brought it home, but I will tell you, my mom was more mad about Petra than the Michael Jackson.
Right.
Because it was wolves in sheep's clothing.
I was wondering if that was going to be the phrase.
Yeah, it's coming back.
Because there's a bunch of people that are listening have no idea what that phrase means, all right? But think about it, okay? You younger people in your 20s and 30s, you probably never even heard the phrase. But that's the worst thing because they're the hypocrites. They're the fake Christians singing the devil's music.
That's right.
That's essentially the wolf.
The wolves come in to steal the sheep.
Yeah, they're wearing sheep's clothing and then they get there.
That's right.
And they're singing rock and roll music in the church, bringing people to hell. That's what that means.
Yeah.
So this is bad.
Yeah.
She's not happy.
Oh, very not happy.
Now, at this point, let me ask you, are you just consuming music as a kid, or are you starting to go, I want to play this music? Are you a musician at this point?
I did play piano.
Okay.
And I did sing because my mom was a piano teacher. So I played piano quite seriously for about 8 years. And when I was in sixth grade, I began playing the trombone.
Wow.
It was kind of like a family thing. So a family thing was you get to play piano,
uh-huh.
and you choose an instrument to play in the marching band.
Of course.
And stuff. So I did that. So I was in music, but I didn't like playing trombone.
Of course.
You know?
No, by the way, nobody does. No. can we just say
see,
that?
See, somebody listens really mad. Somebody listening, they're like, that's my dream, and you just stomped on it.
Yeah, no. They know that I'm going to push them a little bit further.
You're
going
to push
than
them
that.
Further?
Yeah. Nobody dreams of playing. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I kid. I mean, if you see Wynton Marsalis and all those great musicians, of course, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But they play
trumpet. So trombone is sort of like the...
This is the point I'm making. Yeah, yeah. At some point, it's utilitarian. They have to play it for that part in the song, but they really want to play the trumpet.
Yeah, see, I'm a bass player, and so bass player is the utilitarian version of the trombone, as you would just say. So I've always been on I'm a utilitarian person, I guess.
I don't think you are.
I don't think I am.
You're
either.
Not. Nobody believes that.
No.
All right, and so at what point then...
Oh, sorry. I didn't answer your question. So I was doing that. I never thought, you know, I want to be in a rock band.
You're not dreaming of being a musician yet.
No.
And you're how old at this point when we bring
you? So that's sixth grade.
All right, so Petra.
That is.
Yeah, okay.
And Petra, my mom still wouldn't really let me listen to it. But one by one, she began making certain caveats of things I could listen to.
Okay.
Petra ended up on the list, even though she was not happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Funny story, I went to church with Eddie DeGarmo. From the legendary band DeGarmo and Key.
Of course, yeah.
But I wasn't allowed to speak to him. They were like, he's a wolf.
Actually, you're not joking.
I am not joking. I'm 100% not joking.
Jonathan,
do not speak
please stay
to
away
guy.
From Mr. DeGarmo.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fascinating.
He looked at it. So, but those bands were very influential on me, DeGarmo and Key, Petra, Michael W. Smith.
Yeah.
Because they really spoke to me, you know, and I liked, well, we'll get to that a little later. So I began starting this idea of maybe I could sing in a band when I was 15.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. So now we're starting to toy with it.
Now we're, yeah, because all my buddies were starting a cover band.
Well, that was the thing, by the way, back then. You know, garage bands really became a thing. Most people that are in their 20s think garage band is a software on a Mac.
Yeah, this was a thing.
You know what I mean? Everybody was trying to start a band. Because MTV, again, VH1, I mean, it was like everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So you're kicking around the idea. At what point, let's fast forward here. At what point do you actually try this?
Well, I was 15 and my buddies had started a garage band.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah.
And basically, they're like, we don't know anybody that either can sing or has the guts to try.
Right.
And so my best friend was like, He's like, John, you're a singer. You can do this. And I was like, I can't. Yeah, he's like, you're crazy. You'll try anything. I was like, well, I will try.
Sure.
But I didn't know the song. So they would have to write the lyrics down to me. Because I wasn't allowed to really listen to them. And he'd say, here's how it goes if I didn't know it. And I'd sing it. And so I was kind of I just was enjoying it.
Yeah.
But probably when I was the next year, when I was 16, I thought, I think I could maybe do this, you know? And
wow.
I mean, I love music. It's the only thing I would say good at, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't good in school. I was not good enough to play sports. There's a lot of things I was not good at. Music was something that I had a knack for. And I played classical piano for 8 years. So I had a pretty deep understanding of music, and I still played trombone, and I had a scholarship to college and stuff playing trombone for the band. So I had a deep understanding of music. When I was 16, I said, I'm going to try writing a song, see how it goes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how'd it go?
It went okay. Yeah. I mean, enough of my friends were like, you're really good at this, you know? I mean, it wasn't that it was great, but they could recognize that I could do something that my other musician friends couldn't do.
Question for you, and again, we talk about talent, passion, and mission on this show. That's the formula. When you use what you do best, talent, to do work you love, passion, to produce results that matter to you, mission, this is now you're in that proverbial sweet spot. The creator of the universe created you to contribute this way. So now here you go. You've been very good. You've pointed out talents there. You knew this. You start writing a song. I'm curious. I know you loved music. The passion's there. But writing a song for the first time, did that take the passion level up? Was there a little bit more juice in writing the song than maybe performing?
Yeah. Nobody's ever asked me that question, but there's no, it was you couldn't exaggerate how much more it mattered. It was wait a minute, I just kind of created something, not out of nothing, but...
absolutely out of nothing.
Kind of, you know? This is like what I would say to the world. There was this feeling that was like, so I have a chance to say something, and it was hard for me to imagine anyone would ever care.
Right.
But it didn't matter because it was mine, you know?
That's what I want people to hear. That's why I asked the question. Folks, that's what I want you to catch. That's big. This is now your beginning. Young John Cooper is experiencing a unique contribution.
Right.
That's what's going on. Mm. And you're going, oh, man, this feels pretty good. Okay, so let's keep going. 16-year-old, we got the first song out. How does it continue to progress? And I want to work in a two-parter here. All right, that's the first part. Second part, mom and dad, let's bring them back in. The two most influential people in your life to this point, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know how they're reacting to this. So
there's
the two-parter. Take it away.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to start with part two first.
Go for it.
You see, I am because I am not utilitarian. I'm more
than
that.
You are not.
Well, but the reason I have to is very pertinent because when I was sixth grade, so the same time I started kind of hearing rock music.
Yeah.
So that's what, 11 years old maybe?
Yeah.
My mom got cancer.
Oh, no.
And so my mom fought cancer off and on for about 3 years. And it was a really, really hard time in our lives because she was so sick. You know, she had surgery. She had chemotherapy. She had radiation. You know, there's all these things. Also, people got to remember, I mean, cancer is horrible.
Yeah.
Cancer treatment is horrible. But cancer treatment in the 80s is even worse than it is now. So you're dealing with someone that is just sick for, I don't know how long. It felt like a lifetime. It was, what, 6 months, eight months? And after that year, she had about a year of remission, I think is what we call it.
Yep.
And then it came back again, but with a vengeance. And so the last year of my mom's life, she died when I was 15.
Oh my God.
So that last year of her life was just horrible. She was doing treatments 3 times a week. Mm. She was constantly sick. And if she had one good day a week where she wasn't throwing up, she would be so thankful to Jesus. I'm so thankful to Jesus. I'm not throwing up all day today. So you had a house that just kind of had that feeling of death, that stench of death.
Yeah.
It was a terrible time. And so I say that because she died when I was 15, and my mom was very against me playing rock music, and that's going to affect the story as well, because I respected my mom. I learned about Jesus from my mom, and she taught me everything I knew about the Bible. She was a really wonderful person, and she lived her faith.
Mm.
So the reason all that plays in is pretty powerful, because I'm 16 and I'm having this burning feeling like, I kind of think I'm supposed to write a song. You know, that's when I start. I think I'm supposed to write songs, but I still have this, your mom wouldn't want you doing that.
Very confusing, because you've got passion that we just talked about mm-hmm. a moment ago. But now we now know that there's this guilt. You're dealing with passion and guilt colliding.
Yes.
Your head and heart are in a wrestling match.
Yes, that's actually a better way to say it. And that's exactly right. So when I was 18, graduated high school.
Wow.
And I was just like, I have a fire in my bones. Yes. I know I'm supposed to play music. I know it when I pray about it. I just have that sense.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
You know, you're calling. I have a sense. This is what I'm made to do.
Yeah.
And I was reading the Bible, and I just felt God spoke to me. I was remember this passage of scripture when Christ calls someone to follow him, and he says, yes, I want to follow you. Let me go home and bury my dad first.
Right.
You remember that?
Oh, sure.
And Jesus says, hey, let the dead bury their own dead. Yeah. In other words, this is the calling for now.
Yeah.
And as I was reading that, I just felt God saying to me, like, mm-hmm. you're not here to, and I mean this with all respect, you're not here to do the will of your mother. You're here to do the will of your father, who is God. And that's not disrespectful.
No.
I'm 18. I'm an adult.
Sure.
God has a calling for me that I think even if she was alive now, I think she would even understand. Yeah. But that was an issue of something. All right. I know it's my calling. I have to do it. We have to give it a shot. And so that's how that started. I began writing more mm-hmm. and more. And I just said, God, I don't really care about money. I don't care about fame at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'll play anywhere you want me to play. Mm-hmm. And I would play at a youth group at a church, lead worship at a youth group at a church, play at a coffee bar. There was a bar in town that was a recovery bar. So it was for addicts. It wasn't a bar, so it was a...
I was going to say, I was curious to know how that
works. It's like the worst recovery idea of all time.
Right, right.
But it was a hangout place. Uh-huh. It looked like a bar, you know.
Yeah, it felt like a bar, smelled like a bar, but no alcohol.
No alcohol.
Fascinating.
And it was full of people that had kind of made a change in life, but they wanted that atmosphere.
Yeah.
And so then I could play there, because I was 17, 18, 19.
Because they're looking for bar music.
They're looking for
bar
music.
They want some rock and roll.
So I'll go in there and
do Where's your dad on this whole deal at this point?
You know, My dad was more, he wasn't as offended from a biblical position as my mom. He was just more of a practical guy.
He was more concerned about the profession.
Yeah, the profession.
You're going to starve. You're going to be living under
starve,
a bridge.
Exactly. You're a loser. One of those people that never makes. You're a dreamer.
How did that affect you? Because we know what you're feeling with mom. We got the guilt thing with mom. And again, I want people to hear this. And John, here's why I'm diving deeper on this.
Go for it.
A lot of people who, if they think about the methodology that I teach on this show, they go, I know I got the talent. Young John Cooper knew he had the talent. The passion was there. You knew it. And you're figuring out this component of mission, right? Like, I want to put art out into the world. You're still figuring this out. Mm-hmm. The point is you had some certainty. Yet you're wrestling with the guilt, with the mom thing. That's the head and the heart. But then your dad's contributing some head stuff, too.
John,
I want you to go get a degree and get a good, safe job, right? And maybe you can afford a couple of cars and have a membership at the golf club. But this is what all parents feel, right? There's this pressure to prepare our kids to be productive citizens. So you got your dad is on this side. How is that working into it? The whole professional side of things.
Yeah, the American dream kind
of he's kind of going, hey, man.
That was pretty tough, you know, because my dad, I mean, I've got a great relationship with my dad, so I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but he was definitely just like, that is the most loser job I've ever heard of,
right,
you know?
Of course.
And he was very disappointed in me. And, you know, he would let me know that.
Well, I'm sure.
And
were you pursuing college at this
point? I was pursuing college, but I didn't know what I didn't really know why, to be honest.
Well,
I didn't know
not.
Why.
Because there's no degree for rock star.
There's no degree for rock star.
That's why.
I wasn't very academic. I wasn't good at that stuff.
Me either. By the way, I'm curious. So what would you say your GPA was in high school? Not to shame you. I'm going somewhere with this.
Probably 2.9.
Yeah, I was a 2.5.
Okay.
I just want people to hear this.
Right.
There is a pattern here.
Right. Yeah. Well,
think about it.
I think you're right. I mean, I think there certainly is something to say that there's a lot of metrics of being smart or being successful. being a good communicator,
yeah.
all this, than just a GPA
exactly
and
right.
understanding trigonometry. Yeah. I remember taking trigonometry in college and thinking, I can't even say trigonometry.
Yeah.
I couldn't spell it for you right
hey,
now.
Hey, listen
to
me. I dropped college algebra at Liberty University 6 times. And I dropped out of school,
too. I did better than you.
You did. You're far smarter than I am. This is why I was okay asking you that. I meet very few people who had a worse GPA than me in high school.
Right.
I'm serious. And I couldn't care less. Very yeah. proud of it.
Well, I think that there is something to say about this, and I don't want to give anybody the wrong impression because I know
I do that. Let me.
I'll let you give the wrong impression.
Yeah, academics are overrated. I say it all the time. Go ahead.
Well, I think for me, I got so serious about Jesus in college.
Yeah.
I mean, before college started, in the summer,
yeah.
summer between high school and college, I got so enthralled with Christ, wanting my life to matter for Jesus, that I did not care about, I didn't care if I ever made money.
Yeah.
I didn't care about, that's when I realized that the goals of maybe my dad or the American dream, my goals just aren't the same as that because
yeah.
I don't care. And what I want to do is tell people about Jesus.
Yeah.
What I want to do is something that I think I'm made to do that. I think this is where I belong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I can use that to help people. And so, I kind of just began to see myself as different,
mm-hmm.
and I sort of embraced it, and that is when I went out on my own. You know, I supported myself through college, and because I was getting all this pressure, you got to do this, you got to do this. I was like, you know what, I'm going on my own,
mm-hmm.
and I paid my way. Well, I had a scholarship to college, but I had a job, I lived on my own, and I just began to take care of myself. So my feeling was, I don't want to ever have to lean on someone else. I want to make my own way. I don't want their money. I can do it on my own. And as long as I'm taking care of myself and being responsible for the Lord, then I can spend my spare time doing what I love to do and see if it works.
Yeah, I love that. You just answered the real big question that I wanted to get to. And folks, he just gave the answer. So this is the rare moment where I give you the question after the answer. But it's really, how did you overcome that wrestling match between the head and the heart? And you just absolutely knew you were able to, you were courageous enough. Let me just compliment you. You were courageous enough to listen to your heart and follow your heart and go, I'm going to figure it out. And this is where beautiful things happen. I don't care what industry, great people who do great things, the things they were created to do. Because again, John, I know you appreciate this. Greatness has nothing to do with notoriety.
Yes.
Or how many people follow you or how much money you make.
Mm-hmm.
Greatness is in your uniqueness and you figured that out. Hey, we'll be right back with more of my conversation with John Cooper. All right, quick snapshot of where we are. Last year really gave a lot of people a very natural bridge to wonder, is there more in my work? And the answer is a lot of people, millions said yes. Maybe this is the year for those of you who haven't finally made this, so you've been listening to the show, watching the show, and you're going, okay, it's time to put my toe out there. ZipRecruiter can help. They can send you the right jobs, and you can apply to most of them with one click. And they may even send you a job that you would have never found on your own. Sign up for free today on ZipRecruiter.com/Ken. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Ken and put ZipRecruiter to work for you. All right, so let's pivot here. We got a lot of people that are listening here who are in those non-traditional paths, right? Mm-hmm. Not the doctor, the lawyer, the chemist. Not that there's anything wrong with those professions. But they're in that creative space. It's nebulous by nature. Well, there's an album that'll never
nebulous
happen.
Nebulous by nature. That's
yeah.
a great alliteration.
Instead of naughty by nature, it's nebulous,
yeah, nebulous by nature.
Yeah, that just happened. I don't know where that came
that's,
from.
That's what a 2.5 GPA will do
yeah,
for
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
right
that's
there.
A trombone album.
yeah.
That's what that is. Somebody needs to record that. But the idea is here is that they're going, I know I want to do this. It's very creative in nature. It's not your traditional four-year degree. And then you step into the job, and it's not as clean as that. It's very creative, very entrepreneurial.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's a lot of parallel here to your life. What
yeah.
do you say to that person who's early on? They feel the fire in their belly. Mm-hmm. They verify they have the talent. We don't want delusional people
yes.
that show up at American Idol thinking they could sing and they can't.
Yeah.
But they've got the fire in the belly. They've got the talent to match. But they don't have a lot of support from mom and dad. Maybe their teachers, their coaches.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to their heart?
You know, I probably would put some nuance, which is my new word that I hate using, because every time somebody says nuance, I usually say a bunch of stuff I disagree with. But let me give some nuance here. Because I do think it's worth saying, I mean, one of the things I learned from my dad that I'm so thankful for from him is being responsible. My dad is like, you do not go into debt.
Yes.
You do not lean on other people. That's not what, you know, a man doesn't this. A man doesn't this. And I think my dad was right, honestly. And I'm very thankful for that. What I've noticed can be this. I've seen a trend, especially in the generation that was right under me, which was to be dreamers. And sometimes not in the best way. They mm-hmm. want to keep dreaming and they want everyone else to pay for their dream. You know, pay for me, give me money so that I can, you know, try to do this or try to do this. And I always thought, nobody ever gave me money so I could try to do this. I was doing it in my spare time. Mm-hmm. I wanted it enough to not sleep.
That's right.
I wanted it enough to go. I had to work. I was a janitor at my church.
Wow.
I cleaned the toilets and then I went to school. I played in the marching band at school. I wrote music and I would write till 3 a.m. and get up at 6 a.m. for class because I believed in my
yes.
art. And I said, you know, nobody else is going to do it for you.
That's right.
So I would encourage people, I guess when I say nuance, in other words, I'm not giving you the, you got to do everything, do whatever's in your heart. It's a little bit of the, I don't meet a lot of people these days that are like, I'm ready to bleed for what I want to do. I'm ready to sweat. That basically what they want to do is go online and get people to pay for them not have a job so they can fiddle about. So I would tell people the dream is probably good. You probably do have some talent. And the thing that maybe I think a lot of people sometimes are lacking is the, what's that great Jewish word for chutzpah? Is it
yes.
called chutzpah? It's like, do you have the guts to do this? And it's going to cost you something.
Oh, I love that.
So I tell people, they always say, what's your advice for music business? I say, I would tell people it's business. And I wish I had known that. You know, my manager mm-hmm. is probably listening to this right now. And right now he's probably laughing hysterically at hearing me say it. My first 12 years, I was like, this isn't a business. This is art for me.
Mm-hmm.
And all I did was hurt myself. Mm-hmm. I made bad decisions because I refused to read a book about how to run a business.
Right.
And you really end up hurting yourself. So I would say, you know what? There are some good things to take from that traditional work ethic, mm-hmm. I would say,
mm-hmm.
that traditional ethic of not leaning on other people. I think about so many biblical passages like, for people that are Christians like I am, I always read the Bible to find out what I should be like. I read about the Apostle Paul.
Mm-hmm.
The Apostle Paul says, hey, I never took any money from you guys to come and preach. I could have. It would be right for me to. It would be godly for you to pay me to come in here and lead you.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't. He built tents. He was a tent maker so that I would not be a burden to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then he preached and labored in the gospel more than others.
Yeah.
So do that. And then on the other side, though, and this is what I felt the Lord speaking to me when I was reading my Bible and where I split apart from what my dad wanted for me, which was just, I mean, I don't want to read too much into this, but, you know, the Bible says there's a way that seems right to man, but it brings them death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is a principle that everybody says this is what you have to do, but God just might be working outside of the box.
Absolutely.
And his goals for you might be a lot different than what worldly goals are. What is success? And as you said, success isn't having the money. Success is, did I fulfill what God called me to do?
Yes.
And it might come with a little blessing.
Mm-hmm.
It might come with a ton of earthly blessing. But in the end, it's God's blessing, which is overflowing.
Yeah.
It just depends on how you look at it. So I encourage people. I always find such great truths in the Bible with all those little scriptures that I just mentioned.
Well, folks, what you just heard John say here is what we talk about every day, and that is there has to be passion. The reason we use the word passion in our methodology is because I was doing some research on the word. I think it gets misused. It has been kind of turned into a sexual word, a word that is romantic, but the root word in the Greek is pati. P-A-T-I, and it means to suffer. And so, you know, they got it right with the title of the movie about Jesus, the Passion of the Christ.
Right.
He was willing to suffer. And so you just described you were willing to suffer lack of sleep, right?
Right.
Rejection, no money, maybe some criticism from dad. This is the idea that you must do it.
Right.
And so you're willing to suffer.
Mm.
And so that's how you know. If you're willing to suffer to do it, then there's a good chance that you ought to be doing it, because that's right. Now we're engaging the heart. Really, really great stuff. Hey, before I let you go, the new book is Awake and Alive to Truth, Finding Truth in the Chaos of a Relativistic World. This is, boy, one of the things that drives me nuts about this culture is the relativism that is just run rampant. This speaks to somebody who doesn't even maybe darken the door of a church. Maybe you don't even believe in this whole faith thing. Why this book? And even for the person who's never maybe even given faith a shot, how is this relevant to them?
Yeah, it's very relevant. I think what younger people have grown up in such a different world than we did in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And here's what I would say. Let's just say there are people listening now that aren't interested in faith or haven't considered it all that much. This is the reason it matters. What we learned from, let's say, in the last several hundred years, okay? The last several hundred years has been, I think a good way to say it is this. Seeing that there is a reality. Mm-hmm. Meaning the sun comes up in the morning, it goes out at night, you know, seeing there is a world that is real and that we need to try to struggle to understand the way it works. Why does the sun come up, right? Why does the moon, why does this, why do all these things happen? And we call that truth. And for the last several hundred years, there has been the understanding that there is truth. We don't know. We don't understand it fully. There's a lot we don't know, but we have to try to find it so that we can make sense of reality. That has changed drastically in the whole world in the last two decades as this push for postmodern philosophy. And the short version of postmodernism is just this. There is no absolute truth. Mm-hmm. You could never understand why the universe runs the way it runs. And not only could you never understand it, it all depends on how you interpret it. Mm. So you have your truth. So that's why you turn on the news on. People say, she shared her truth.
Right.
Tell your truth. It's this truth is internalized to whatever it means to me. The reason that this matters for people, whether they're a person of faith or not, is that the reason that the world feels like chaos is because it is chaos. Everybody has their own truth. Up is down, left is right. And we're all trying to understand. Every time you turn the news on, there's so much propaganda on every news platform. You don't even know what to believe. Like right now we have Russia invading Ukraine. I do not understand what's going on. Every time I read reports, I'm like, is this true? Is it not true? No one knows. A lot of this is just because it's not just that facts are fudged and it's all based on interpretation and spin, and it affects our lives in a great way. So that's why I wrote the book, to encourage people to understand that if you live that sort of life, your your life will be built on such an insecure foundation.
Yeah.
Absolutely insecure. And I encourage people to find Jesus Christ, who the Bible says is the truth. Mm. And when you find Jesus Christ, all of a sudden you have a foundation for the rest of your life, and everything else is built on top of that foundation of Jesus and truth. So that's what the book is about. I hope that people like it.
Yeah, I think they will, and you're a great thinker, and I think you're going to create thought, and we need to be open to thinking these days. I'll just leave it at that. All right, final question. I have to ask all musicians this one. You can only go to one concert, only one, for the rest of your life. It's just one. Who are you going to see?
Well, I've never thought about this, but the first name that comes to my mind is Prince.
There it is. Let's take the first thought. Yeah. Why Prince?
Prince was, unfortunately, an absolute genius. You know, Prince played like 23 instruments.
I read that shortly after he died, and I didn't know that either.
And here's the thing about Prince is, he doesn't play. See, I meet lots of musicians who claim they play multiple instruments, but the truth is they play one good and three not so good.
Right.
Prince plays all the instruments better than the people he hires.
Yeah.
He can, if they're not doing it right, he says, no, that's not how you do it. He'll pick up a guitar. This is how you do it. He'll play the piano. This is how you play the drums. This guy, he was just supernatural like that.
I love that.
And talk about somebody that broke boundaries. I mean, it's like, what is he? Is he rock, R&B, funk,
right?
Urban?
We don't know.
Pop, and even
he's
everything.
And he changed his name to a symbol. He kept it going.
Yes, he had a guitar that looked like the symbol.
It's like now he doesn't even have a name. He's just this.
He's an essence. He's an essence of nebulous by nature.
There it is,
say.
Folks. Well done. We wrapped it back. Okay, have you ever played the trombone at a Skillet concert?
Yes.
Forgive me for asking.
I did for a little while as kind of a joke.
It has to be. It's the last thing people are expecting.
Yeah.
But it would be the thing I would come for. Like I would be like with Stacey going, hey, wait a second. I'm telling you, at some point in the concert, he's bringing a trombone.
Yeah.
You're going to love it.
It's been a long time. I wouldn't do it. It's been about 10 years.
Yeah, the lip's out of shape.
The lips are definitely out of
shape. I played the trumpet for 3 years and only 3 years. And I was never made it to first chair.
Yeah.
So I have just a smidge of understanding.
Very competitive, first and second chair.
It's very difficult.
And
I didn't have it. I didn't have the talent, folks. You got to understand. You got to know your talent. And when you don't have it, move on. Okay, nobody pays for average. John Cooper, you're a rock star to most people. You're a good dude. And I think that to me is what I take away most. Really glad to have you here. You've helped a lot of people. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, folks, I hope you enjoyed the interview with John Cooper. Here's one thing I took away. I don't know what you took away, but here's one thing I want you to ponder. That John, when describing being willing to lose sleep, being willing to try something that his parents didn't agree with, this speaks to passion. This is about suffering. He talked about suffering. What are you willing to suffer for? I want you to hear this. Not the takeaway that it verifies passion, no. But that is how you know that you are supposed to do it. Because you can't not do it. This will give you all the tenacity that you need. Is it passion? Yes. But it is also the source of the tenacity that you will need to stay with it. Boy, that was good. I hope you got so much out of that. I did too. Keep on keeping on.
If you enjoy this podcast, you should check out other great podcasts from the Ramsey Network, like Ramsey Call of the Day.
Check out our new Ramsey Call of the Day podcast. It'll give you a quick hit of advice about life and money in under 10 minutes. Listen to the Ramsey Call of the Day, wherever you listen to podcasts.